This episode is about minutes 66 through 70 of Solo, A Star Wars Story, featuring Crystal Beth, who I'm so excited to finally have on the podcast. Hello there, and welcome to Star Wars Music Minute, where we celebrate the music and sound of Star Wars 5 cinematic minutes at a time. I'm Chrysanthi Tan, you can call me Xanthi, and today is all about minutes 66 through 70 of Solo, A Star Wars Story, in which Chewie slams his fist on the Dejarik table, and then we continue with Han and Kira making out in the cape closet, and the set of minutes ends with L3 telling Kira that it works. So, it just works. Welcome to Star Wars Music Minute, Crystal.
I'm here, finally! Yay!
I'm so glad that we made this happen.
Yay. Also, such a great chunk of minutes.
Yeah.
Because you get Chewie learning a thing that obviously we're going to see again.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the funnier lines in the movie.
Yes. It's bookended by some very classic material. And in the middle of it is, I mean, it's probably the horniest music cue in this whole film is this Han and Kira is Lando's closet. So we have to talk about that.
Awesome.
Let's get into listening to a bit of it.
Now you can't wipe them off. They're holograms. Hey, Chewie, relax. Hey, try to compose yourself. Look, all you gotta do is think a few moves ahead, anticipate your opponent. There's a lesson to be learned here.
You guys seen Kira?
People are predictable.
And now here's the beginning of Lando's closet. A very romantic theme.
Yeah, I had to try one on.
Which we'll continue talking about in a second. But listeners, if you're following along on the soundtrack, this is the track called Lando's Closet. And obviously, and it's the same title on the regular version and on the deluxe version of the soundtrack. So, yeah.
I like when people don't think they need to get creative with their names. Lando's Closet, not Two Lost Lovers Meet. It's just Lando's Closet. There it is.
Well, the thing is, but Lando's not even in this scene, so it is a little bit funny. But I will also say that cue names, like the actual, if you look at the actual cue sheet of films, oftentimes the name on the cue sheet isn't actually what we see in the soundtrack, because cue names are hilariously literal sometimes, because they're just for the back end, they're just to know, and so it's more to just like know where you are. So. Yeah,
you're in Lando's closet.
Yeah, literally.
That's so I know that when you're reading a script, it's super literal. Like, interior, closet, day. And then it goes into anything more specific just to show you, like, where you're starting. I never thought about that with music.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. It's pretty funny sometimes because you'll see, I mean, have you seen the deluxe edition of the Solo soundtrack, the track list at least? It came out 2 years after the regular version, so.
Oh.
Yeah, but it has like more material on it that the regular version of the soundtrack, you know, usually misses some things that were actually in the film. So the deluxe version like has the rest of it basically, and a little bit extra that got cut out. And so you can see some of the names for tracks that are essentially the same thing, but you'll see different track names. Like, I'll tell you a couple. Like, this one is one of the ones that is just the same, so it's a little bit boring in that way. But one of them is like, okay, so on the normal version of the soundtrack, there's a track called Flying with Chewie, and on the deluxe version of the soundtrack, the cue is called Chewie Untamed 2M13.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Pretty funny.
That's so cool. That is so interesting. This entire podcast is very intriguing to me, and today I'm just going to be in awe because I'm the opposite of you, where I don't even realize music's on. Like, I don't hear it. I can acknowledge it and I know that it makes me feel feelings, but someone could be like, oh, what's this song? And I'm like, oh, music's on? I just won't even hear it. So it's, I'm excited to learn more about this.
Oh my gosh. This is a really, this is a good one too, because there is part of the soundtrack, or what we hear in the film is not the complete version, is not the complete cue. So we'll get to compare what was intended, like what the actual full cue is and the part where it actually cuts off instead, because I am not a fan of where it cuts off. We'll see. Well, yeah, we'll get into it.
Oh my gosh. I can't wait. What an adventure we're going to be on.
Seriously. Wait, before we move on, I want to tell you a couple more track names that are on the, mm-hmm. like, that are the cue names, talking about, like, how hilariously literal they are. Coming up, there's one called Oksana Florin Yada Yada Yada. And that's just when Kira is pretending to be Oksana Florin. So, like, you can see, like, where the composer... You know, they might not exactly know what's going on. So, you know, I can just imagine like John Powell being like, this is yada, yada, yada track. I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing. That is. Tell me more. I want more.
Yeah. There's one called there are a few of them that are like on the regular soundtrack. It's like Mind Mission or whatever. And then on the deluxe version, it's like Extra Deluxe Mind Mission. And then there's also like there's a super extra deluxe end credit suite, and there's like deluxe train heist,
electric boogaloo.
Yeah. So yeah, just it's funny stuff.
That is so funny.
Yeah. It's always fun to look at. You can see even more detail when you find like the places online where like composers have to register their cues with like a performance rights organizations. And that's where you'll get the really like really, really boring titles that are just like to make sure that they get the percentages are divvied up correctly and whatever. So you'll have like Crawl Part One, Crawl Part Two, like Mines Part One, Mines Part Two. So like there will be like here, let's see. I'll see if I can find one from this.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Any of this happened.
Cause there are so many like cooks in the kitchen. Really, and so John Powell will have credit for some things. John Williams will have credit for some things, and then there are other people who are uncredited as well that worked with John Powell. So yeah, it's a lot. It's a whole thing. Yeah.
So. I mean, I shouldn't be as surprised as I am, because it's the same thing on the other side with the film and how. You have to, like, the filming of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's all of the little nooks and crannies you don't think about that you have to focus on. But I never thought about that with music, and my mind is blown. This is amazing.
Totally. Well, we're about to enter the infamous... It's not infamous yet. Maybe after this episode. The infamous part where the cue cuts off, the one everyone's talking about. No, not really.
First page of Reddit.
Seriously. So actually, before we get to listening to it in the film, let's listen to how it is on the soundtrack first so we can hear it kind of fully blossoming. Well, oh my gosh, my cat is meowing so loudly. So I'm just going to keep playing some music. So here's the order of events.
Animal.
Here's the order of events. We're going to get into it, because I'm not going to play the full 2 minute track, but I'm going to get into it with the scene. And then the part where I want to start comparing it, I'll tell you, it'll make sense in like 30 seconds. Okay. So we're going to keep listening for a second.
Too many games. So what's the plan?
Well, I thought we'd talk a little first, and then
love,
you know,
music.
She,
for Castle. You know.
Oh, for.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yeah. How good?
Foolproof.
Well, it better be.
You go first.
No, what were you gonna say?
Kind of awkward.
I want to tell you so much, and I want to know everything that's happened to you since Corellia.
Well, I'm not sure we have that kind of time.
So in the background, the music is doing this like
we
love
have
stuff.
All the time we want after the job, you and I. What?
Here's where it takes a turn. Okay.
I want to.
you want to?
To tell you everything that's happened.
Okay, I'm going to cut that off because now I'm going to play that part on the on the actual clean soundtrack so that you can hear it without the dialogue and it won't be muddled and everything. Okay, so here's what we're listening for. At first, it's sort of, it's the Han and Kira love theme. And it's strings, it sounds kind of romantic. And then when Kira starts talking about, like, you know, she wants to tell him everything and they, you know, I'm not sure we have that kind of time and there's that conversation, we start to hear the Secrets theme, which is associated with Crimson Dawn. And it's the dee dee dee, dee dee dee. And it comes in really softly. And what's going to happen is it's going to repeat six times in a row, we're going to hear this dee dee dee. And every time it's going to be different and it's going to lead somewhere. So that's what we're listening for. All right. Starting it. Okay. That's one. This is two. Three. Four. Five. Six. And then this is... Okay, I'm going to pause it right there for a second so you can hear me while it's not playing. Okay, so did you hear how it leads up and then it kind of like explodes or blossoms?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So, I am listening and watching you like this is a lecture right now and I don't think I've shut my mouth since we started recording. I'm like, just even listening to you for this short of amount of time.
Oh my gosh.
There is so much happening that I cannot even comprehend and wrap my mind around. You are such an intelligent, talented person.
Oh my gosh.
This is insane to me.
Oh,
and yes, I did hear that. And I did notice all six things that I never have paid attention to before. Jeez Louise, this is insane. Keep going. Teach me more.
Okay, I'll keep going. Okay. Okay, so we have... Okay, so that's the Secrets theme. And here... Okay, so here I'm going to talk about the horniness of that cue. First of all, there's the arc of it. It leads up to that point where when they're about to start making out, where the music switches to like this downhill feeling. So here's what I want us to think about this next time that we listen through.
Okay.
Okay. So we have the Secrets theme repeating six times. And of course, the Secrets theme represents Kira's involvement with Crimson Dawn and everything. And she's talking about how like, oh, we can't do that. Like, I don't think we can do this and whatever. And it starts out like kind of ominous sounding, like it's kind of getting in the way of their love theme. And then with every iteration, it becomes progressively more like, fuck this, who cares? Come here.
Yep.
And
that's the DDD thing.
Yeah. Uh-huh,
exactly. And every time it changes and then it orgasms.
Exactly. Exactly.
Gosh. So wow.
It's like when you're on a roller coaster and there's like, you're going up the lift hill and it's like, the chain kind of pulls you up and it feels like laborious. It's like a lot of effort. Like you're accumulating all this like potential energy and it kind of feels like effort. That's like, to me, like what the Secrets theme is doing there when it repeats, like every repetition of it doing something new is like taking it to a different place. And it's like going higher and higher. And then finally, when it swells and the strings, you know, the violin takes over, it's like whoosh, going downhill. And after that, it's like roller coaster ride. So let's
I'm excited
that.
To
let's
listen
do that
again.
Uh-oh, secrets. Secrets, but maybe? Secrets again? Again? It's more insistent. Now the upper octave's gonna double it. Now it's like, we're really going for it. And whoosh, kinetic energy. We're rushing downhill. Your stomach drops underneath you. The wind's like whipping past you. You're screaming. You're like laughing. Your heart's pounding.
Oh my God.
You're rounding a sharp corner. There's another one. Oh, you weren't expecting that dip there. Oh, another dip. You were not expecting that. Like, where are you going with this? Oh my gosh. Okay, now, okay, a couple more corners. Now you're feeling the friction is starting to slow you down. It can't last forever. And you pull into a natural stop. So that's the cue. That's Lando's closet.
You know what's kind of funny is in that, I don't know if I'm making it up now, but I kind of heard Han and Leia's music in there.
Yeah.
Like so subtly, mm-hmm. but there's one point, it's like, it was probably maybe like 20 seconds before the end. And I was like, I know that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. John Powell puts in like little references to like, kind of borrows some of the chord, some of the harmonies, some of the like chord progressions from Han and Leia's theme. Totally. You nailed it.
Oh my God. this feels like a magic show. Wow.
Yeah. It's okay. So
like I'm getting goosebumps, and if I wasn't on so many antidepressants, I might be crying right now.
Well, it's a very horny cue.
Yeah.
It's like
you can feel it edging.
Yeah.
And then it happens. That's like literally what it feels like.
And it really is like a roller coaster. It's like space. It's like hyperspace. It's like romantic hyperspace, something like that. It's yeah. So
that's so cool.
It's an exhilarating thrill ride, put it that way. But
geniuses.
But let's listen to it in the context of the movie and see if it is, and see where it stops, basically. Because I've already told you that that's going to happen. All right. So I'm going to start. See, I'm queuing it up. Okay.
I'm not sure we have that kind of time.
We could. We could have all the time we want after the job. Wow. You and I. What?
Secrets.
Right here. I want to.
Two.
You want to.
Tell you everything that's happened.
Three.
But I know if I do, you won't look at me the same. The way that you're looking at me right now.
Five.
Nothing's gonna change the way I'm looking at you. Right
you
now.
Don't.
Six.
I know what I've done.
Now you're going down the roller coaster. All right.
Am I interrupting something?
And buzzkill.
Good, because we got a lot of work to do.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that makes that interruption so much more intense.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's the thing, like,
ridiculous.
It almost goes there. Like, you go over the hill, you're going downhill, but then it's like the ride breaks down after four bars. You're not going to have your...
And you waited in line for it for like 4 hours.
Yeah, like 4 years. Yeah, exactly. So we're missing most of it. We're missing most of the fun time.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot,
Even
Beckett.
The part I recognized.
Yeah.
Which is like the whole point of that scene to me is that Han just can't make out without getting interrupted.
I feel like the fact that the cue exists in a fuller form kind of indicates to me that it was intended, that it was written assuming that the whole thing would get to be played, because it does come to like a close at the end. Like, yeah. I think if like the composer knew that he was only going to actually get four bars there, I think he would have like maybe changed the timing of that a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very passionate about this thing I just learned.
Yeah.
Because first of all, why would you record anything or like compose anything that extra And then include the part that was a Han and Leia thing. If you didn't think they were going to use it. That is so interesting.
I think it was cut. I think the film was probably had a cut there. Like if, so scoring happens like last. So scoring would have happened after the film was already cut. So he must have cut, he must have scored it to something on screen and then something on screen got cut. So the music had to get cut too. Unfortunate. I think it's unfortunate.
I didn't notice till now.
I mean, you wouldn't notice unless you had, unless you would have compared it to the like full version of it.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't like the only reason I noticed because was because like I was watching these minutes and I'm like, okay, yeah, this is, this corresponds with that track. And then I was listening to just that track and I was like, but I don't remember hearing this part in the film. This part feels like it develops to more places. And I feel like in the film, it just gets cut off. And then sure enough, I compared them and it gets cut off. The reason like the filmmaking is a group effort, blah, 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 blah. However, I feel like sometimes decisions obviously will benefit one department more than another, or
right,
the others will maybe make do or whatever. So like what it, it, they didn't obviously just cut it. They basically, they cut it and kind of replaced a note from another place so that they could have that part where it just draws out.
Yeah.
Like, just to sustain.
I do that when people mess up recordings when I'm editing it.
Yeah, so that's what happens here. It's, you know, it's a little bit comped right there. But
do you think the editor did it? And then, like, did you have to get permission from a composer
to
edit their stuff?
Oh, no.
Gasp. I gasp at
composers
that.
The composers are at the mercy of the film.
Which is funny because films are literally at the mercy of the music.
Thank you. So true.
I have such passion right now.
Me too. I feel like
I'm gonna like start yelling at you, but it's not about you.
Okay.
I'm just prepared. At like an 8 and I'm about to get higher, I feel.
I'm prepared. I just feel like the movie for me, I struggle just jumping into this story. You know, we're the first time seeing Solo, it's not like you have to sell me on Kira. You have to sell me on this. I don't just jump in. This is not Leia, like put it that way, right. You know, like, so I want to actually see their passion and like, I need to spend a little bit more time with them in that space before just getting cut off all the time or it becomes less believable. Like, I think it just like undercuts the passion in that moment, to have the love and it makes the love theme to me sound silly. Almost, because it's like, why go through? It's like such an earnest, like romantic, extremely like overtly romantic. Like it's not like ironically romantic or like something like, I don't know. It's so old school, like Puccini style, like operatic, romantic, all out earnest. And it's kind of cut off in sort of a humorous comedic way. And I don't like that. For them.
So what's funny is that is exactly how I felt the scene. That's how the scene felt to me. And I was like, why is this funny right now? And I don't like I said, I'm not listening to like what's happening and how it's cut and all of that. But, and I always just chalk it up to acting and writing because I'm not thinking about music, but it is super passionate and then ends where it is a subtle funny, but no one's being funny, which makes me think that they were bad acting because there was no like comical pull away.
Right. Oh, as a comedian, so you know more about that than me.
Just like, it's so subtle, but, and obviously I watch a lot of movies. I love movies and I'm very aware. I buy soundtracks all the time. I'm very aware of how the music makes one feel when you're watching and how music can change the entire feeling. It makes so much more sense to me why that scene didn't feel true. And even the music's low too. Like you can't, for me, yeah, it's there. It's, oh look, they're cute. But hearing it now with that, it's like a button at the end of a joke that never happened.
Totally.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I like am in a different universe right now. Okay, keep going. Teach me more things.
Well, I think it's really interesting that like you picked up on the feeling. Like music is, you know, it's probably one of the most subtle manipulators that film has at its behest, just because it's one of the elements that probably the general public just doesn't have as much accessible, vocabulary to describe it. So I think that's why it's like
knowledge was the right word too.
People have intuitive knowledge of music, but not having the vocabulary about it makes it really hard to talk to other people about it and get validation for the things that you're hearing. And then to like bounce your ideas off of other people, if that makes sense.
Oh my gosh, you're so smart.
because I talk to people on, you know, for this podcast all the time, and some people are musicians and some people are not, but regardless of like people's musical background, it's not like the non-musicians just have absolutely nothing to say about music. It takes just like a different vocabulary or like a different way of expressing it. And so not being able to communicate with other people about it, I think is like what makes music hard to talk about. You know, when people talk about Star Wars, there's so much like uncritical focus oftentimes on the music or lack of focus. There's an uncritical, the focus on the music is uncritical. It's more, it's like he slayed it, you know, it's that, or it's like,
right.
This one's a banger. This one's not. You know, it's like,
yeah,
just rankings and stuff like that. And like, that's not, you know, it's because how else are we going to talk about it if we don't have like a common language about it? And it's easier to, for anyone, even without going to film school, to at least learn things like, oh, that's a J cut or like that's a wipe cut and things like that. Like I've never made a film. Like I've never directed a film or acted or whatever, but it just feels like those terms are floated around much more than like musical.
Well, with all of that, like showing stories, you can use so many different senses. Music, it's just hearing. So you can do a whole movie without sound and general public will understand it. You can do a whole movie with music and no picture. General public can appreciate it, but not necessarily feel what each specific stop point or note or elongation of a note means, because you can't see it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't really, I guess with a movie, if you're just watching it, you can see it, but I think that there's a different sense that comes with watching things. You can empathize with facial features and body motion and like what is happening around them. But with music, it's just your ears.
Yeah.
And I don't see the motion. So those like notes that cut off and start and are long, those are like the body language that I don't understand.
Right. Okay. So like if we're watching something on stage or on screen, we can see when like one person is on screen and then another person enters the frame and then another person enters and then it's, you know, a group of people. We can see visually the difference between that. But then the equivalent something sort of equivalent to that would be like listening to something. You're hearing a solo instrument and then you hear like a violin come in and then you hear like an oboe come in and then you're like, oh, there's four people playing. That's where it gets harder to discern.
This is insanity. Like, I actually am going to cry because it's a whole nother level of understanding something awesome that I like can't wrap my head around, and it's so frustrating, but that's exactly it. I can see when a new instrument enters, but it doesn't mean the same thing. It's like I'm colorblind. Like I'm not, if I was watching something and couldn't see every color, oh my gosh, I'm living half a life.
I think there's like a visual a bias or something like where I don't like have statistics on it or anything, but I feel like the things that we see and just the way that like life is, it visual, like the visuals are probably more preferenced.
Yeah.
So I think people just don't have as much experience having to like close their eyes and listen to things.
You're right. And I'm very upset about it right now. Like the amount of, because I went to school for film production, the amount of time I've put towards how to arrange a shot and as an actor, how to be in the shot and find your light and make sure you're in the right spot and all of that, I never mapped it over music. And my husband and I, I love going to, like when the New York or Denver Philharmonic, they play the music for movies. I love it because I love, and I thought I understood, music for movies. But there's a whole, and my husband works for the Berklee College of Music. Like maybe I should take a class. Like actually invest some of my life into what he does. But I want, what's funny is the first thing I'm thinking is I want a book that can kind of explain this to me, but it would still be visual.
Right.
I need to hear it.
Yeah. It's really tough.
This is so awesome. Do you want me to say it again?
Yes.
Okay. So I think where we just were was me getting very excited about the fact that entrances of instruments into music are exactly like entrances with film and acting. And I did not even realize that until right now. And while we were trying to figure out the sound, I texted my husband. I literally texted him. I'm going to start crying again. I'm learning so much in this podcast. It's insane. It's all about the music and I had no idea. I'm getting emotional because it's like watching it again for the first time. Which is like something I never thought I'd get again. So I'm pretty excited. It's really awesome.
I love that feeling.
And it's about Solo, which is like my least favorite one, and I'm still excited.
My least favorite one, too. And then listening. But every time
even that little bit with like Han and Leia, and it's just like.
Yeah.
You know. You know. You're the music person. But it's like really affecting me. Emotions.
Music will do that.
I get over a six and I have no idea how to handle it anymore.
Neither do they after six times of hearing the Secrets theme. Hey.
Amazing.
So listeners, sorry about if what we are talking about now sounds a little bit disjointed from what happened before. I was having an audio issue. And we are on the other side of that now. So on with this discussion. So we covered the Han and Kira love theme that is in Lando's closet and incorporates the Secrets motif. And Beckett is a buzzkill and comes in and interrupts the moment. And let's continue listening after that to see what happens next, because then promptly another cue starts.
Mistake. This is yours to make, except when you start to interfere with my livelihood.
This isn't going to interfere with your livelihood.
You don't see it because you don't want to.
Maybe I know her a little better than you do.
Maybe you don't know her well enough. All right? Look, like you, kid. We got a good thing going here. Me, you, Chewie.
Yeah.
Right? The makings of a solid crew.
Those sounds in the background.
It does not work with Kira.
It worked with Val.
You trusted her.
You want to know how I've survived as long as I have? I trust no one.
So this is a secret theme again.
Everyone will betray you and you will never be disappointed.
Sounds like a lonely way to live.
It's the only way.
Okay. That's the point where we transition to Han looking out the cockpit. So these are all exciting times for Han, for his first time in the Millennium Falcon. We're getting to experience a lot through his eyes. I can't help but notice those like sounds in the background when Beckett is talking. I thought it was my cat for a second, but it was just the Dejarik pieces.
Yeah. Sound mixing. Know what
which,
that is.
Which I don't know how, I don't know if they use the original Dejarik sounds in this film, but in A New Hope, when Ben Burtt made them, I believe that is his own voice, Ben Burtt's own voice, like sped up really fast and like made to sound really small.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think I remember him saying in an interview that it was just kind of a last minute thing, like running up against the deadline and needed to come up with some sounds for these pieces. And so he's like, oh, better record something. So that's what we have.
Might as well be myself.
And yeah. There's so much in A New Hope that is just Ben Burtt and his friends.
That is so cool.
Yeah. So on the soundtrack, this corresponds to Trust No One, 4M29 is the name of that track.
4M29. Got it.
Mm-hmm. That is
what's that from?
It's the Q number. It's just the number.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
They just go in order. So the one before that, Lando's Closet, actually the full name of it is Lando's Closet 4M28.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Like episodes of a Movies by Minute podcast.
Yep.
They just get higher.
And here, right where I paused, and we'll hear it in just a second. Listen for the Rebel fanfare. Actually, let's just play that. Why not? And this is when Han is in the cockpit of the Falcon, going out of hyperspace.
Dropping out of light speed now.
Ready to. The Acadies Maelstrom.
I'm gonna go check on the dampers.
You need anything?
Equal rights?
That's the young Han Solo heroic theme. Works so well there. Any thoughts? Do you like
yes.
do you like the Rebel character here?
Any thoughts? Yes. I have thoughts. I don't know the words for them. Music vocabulary. I remember that part when he was first there and it, anytime that music comes up from the original trilogy, I just get excited. And it's going to make any moment in any film, mostly Star Wars films, because that's what they use the music in. Even like subtle, teeny notes, like three notes, it will automatically invest me more in what's happening in the scene. And I'll even, because I watch Star Wars so often and I've listened to the soundtracks often, other music, I'll be like, they're trying to sound like Star Wars. I can like hear a couple of notes that are like the same and I'm like, you stole it. You can't use those three notes together anymore. They're Star Wars notes. But yeah, so this part, I remember being in the theater and just being like, yeah, pretty much like Millennium Falcon's my favorite character now, pretty much. So anything with that is the best.
So you're pretty easy to please in terms of quote unquote fan service, like music. Like, it's not like you don't get overloaded too quickly with recalls of the past.
No, God, no. People that are like, oh, too many Easter eggs. I'm like, no, make me remember why I'm so happy all the time about this. And like, you don't want to be too heavy handed. Like, I don't want to, like, I don't know, Starkiller base. Maybe a different thing. But I love recognizing something. And I like those movies, the originals, for a reason. The music meant something to me my whole life for a reason. And when it's used right and put into the right spots, I think it's great.
That's a good way. Yeah, that's a good way to think about it and feel about it in order to enjoy the soundtrack to this movie.
You think they do it too much?
I'm not sure if they do it too much. I'm not 100% sold on the use of the main theme in Rebel Fanfare in particular, but I'm warming up to it. It was just like hard for me to integrate at first just because I associate the main theme with Luke.
Right. So I was generalizing like across all Star Wars when they bring it up. Han's not a rebel.
Right.
He's not a rebel. And and especially now, nowhere near a rebel. He's just being young and doing his thing. It's weird in this because he's not a rebel. And they're also not like surviving anything right now or attacking something. And that rebel fanfare is like when something epic is happening. But watching the Millennium Falcon to me is also epic. And the Millennium Falcon is a rebel. So...
Yeah,
a little bit of both.
I see your point. I mean, how can I argue with that? I mean, I feel like it makes sense in the context of this entire film basically being a reach to what else has already come. So yeah. It's not really a film, or to me, it's not really a film for the film itself. It's the film for reminding us of all the ways that everyone in this movie and everything in this movie will grow into what we already love.
Right.
So,
and I thought it was too soon for that as well.
Too soon, like...
in our universe. We didn't need a Han movie yet.
So you think like...
Harrison Ford is still alive.
True, yeah.
I do not need to see someone playing him. Especially someone... My big thing was I don't want anyone that wanted... That anyone that auditioned to play Han Solo should not have gotten the part. Because that is not who Han Solo is. They should have been like, do you want to act? And the person would be like, no. And they'd be like, great, you're cast. Leave your gas station. Leave your accounting office. Leave your finance desk. Whatever. Come. You are now the new Han Solo. But I'm also picky and really attached to Han Solo. So,
how do you feel about Lando?
Oh, I think Lando was great. I liked that he was a little more flamboyant because I think that's something that if they wanted to, they could grow with it. But it would also make sense that he's like calmed down a little bit as he got older, and kind of makes Han Solo's lines to him about being in charge of everything hit harder because he's taking it seriously, which is what happens when you get older. You start to take things more seriously, especially if they're a significant chunk of your income. But also, Donald Glover can do absolutely no wrong in my eyes. So
I think Donald Glover is incredible in this role. And actually, what you just said, I don't think I ever thought about this, but seeing Han in this movie doesn't make me appreciate Han more when I go back to the old movies, but seeing Lando in this movie does make me feel like I got a little something more when I go back to the old movies. And so, I don't know, maybe that's sort of like a personal litmus test for me is if we're going to fill characters, then.
Right. You're trying to add to their life story. You're trying to make it better. It's like when people tell me, Crystal, you don't have to talk all the time. You should add to the silence or add to the conversation or stay silent. The reason why Boba Fett, Mandalorian, Kenobi, people are excited about these things because even though there's Clone Wars and all of that, there's still so much to learn about them. And Han Solo, his growth happens in Star Wars. So like his growth as a human, he becomes a better human in Star Wars. So if he has growth in Solo, it negates his growth in the movie. But if he's a dick through Solo, it doesn't add to Han Solo in the movies, their main movies.
Well, he could grow twice, but...
No. Solo, one time.
Once. One time.
But that's one thing with Solo for me. One of the reasons why I was so upset that was one of the first...
Projects
that they did outside of the main nine. I didn't feel like we were ready for it yet. I don't know how I would feel if they came out with a whole Leia movie either. It would be so awesome, but I would still be like, that's not my Leia. It is. It would have to be done really well. And I would still watch it and enjoy it and probably weep. But movies, they were the Star Wars movies. But.
I feel like I wouldn't. I'm not ready for a Leia movie at all. This is a bad position to be in because it's not what's happening. But I tend to prefer waiting for things and having
yes,
fewer things to pick from. Yes, I will watch every Star Wars and probably read every Star Wars and do every Star Wars. But I kind of wish that I was feeling more like I could focus my attention more on like each one being really special. Like the series last year kind of started to bog me down where I'm like, okay, another episode or something, another series. Okay. Another series. All right. This is a lot. And I'm happy for it, but like also I wouldn't have minded if you didn't give me this much.
Right. Yeah. Don't put R2-D2s on the oranges I want to buy. Oh, I'm at the grocery store.
Oh,
I don't need to buy. Oh no, it was BB-8. I was like, I don't need a BB-8 orange. I just want Clementines. The bag had Star Wars all over it. And there is a quote from the very famous movie Angels in the Outfield where they say, easy, I think his name is Rex, less is more. When the guy's being a real jerk at the end, the announcer guy.
I haven't seen that movie, but I've heard that quote, so...
Yeah, less is more.
Very famous. Yeah.
Ranch Wilder was his name. You can't fire me. I'm Ranch Wilder.
Sounds like a Doritos flavor.
It does. That's amazing. I would eat that. Ranch Wilder. It's just like a more intense ranch chip. But less is more. When you're surrounded by it, it takes away from the special. And... this is a really bad comparison, but you know, never mind.
I want to hear now.
Like bad news. I was going to say like specific news, but like if you were just flooded with things like about the world, I was going to say school shootings, what happened, it would be like, oh my God. And I say to my husband now, there was another school shooting last night. And he just like shakes his head and he's like, it's crazy. And I'm like,
another Star Wars.
Exactly. It's not the same.
Not the same at all.
It's death, but it's just, and it's not the same. But when you are desensitized, it takes away from the joy you can find from a good Star Wars if there's too many. And no one's ever going to be happy because everyone has different views of what their Star Wars
right.
is.
Right.
But that's why I like the books, because I can still imagine it my way.
Hmm. Do you have any favorite Star Wars books?
This is going to be really funny, but I really like the novelization of the movies.
Which ones? It's like,
I really like the novelization of Phantom Menace by Terry Brooks. It's so much better than the movie. And like I read it so many times. These are the opening lines of it. Tatooine, period. The sun burned down out of the cloudless desert sky. The sun's burned down out of the cloudless desert sky, washing the vast wastelands with a brilliant white light.
Wow.
And the whole book is just so eloquently written, and there's extra scenes, and you get to kind of see it the way you want to see it. Because if you rewatch Phantom Menace now, the special effects are so bad that it almost hurts to watch. But you can still read that book and get all of the same feelings that you had watched, or that it happens to me anyway. I get the same feelings, but I will read that book before I watch that movie.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I haven't read that novelization in a really, really long time. But I like the Revenge of the Sith one a lot.
Yeah. I should probably read them again.
Super, super good. I don't know how we got on that subject, but we were talking about the themes, like the recall of these old themes,
right.
Basically coming up, and you know, this is for the fans. This moment is for the fans, hearing mm-hmm. hearing the Rebel fanfare, and we are also hearing interspersed with it the young Han Solo heroic theme, which is do 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 do, and awesome sound design in space is what my notes say. And then we're about to enter this conversation.
What's that sound?
Carbon bergs, size of planets crashing into each other. Ships fly in there, they never come out.
It's ionized gas, water vapor, possibly vacuum breathing life forms swirling around the moor. Only way in or out is this channel.
So what are you going to do about your little problem?
Such a British script right there.
Problem.
Well, that brand on your wrist tells me that you're committed. And that young male's heart fluctuations tell me he's in love with you.
Han is not in love with me.
Oh, please.
I love when her voice changes there.
Me too.
I know from Star Wars Minute podcast, on Star Wars Minute podcast, you were on the week after I was on. Mm-hmm. And they asked me, like they do, like, do you have anything else to say about the rest of the movie? Anything you particularly like or dislike? And when they asked me that, I said, I particularly am not fond of the way that L3 is written. And I'm not a fan of her whole character in this film. And then next to the week after, when they asked you that, you talked about how much you love L3.
Yes, isn't it funny? Because I love L3. I thought she was the perfect comedic relief. And every Star Wars has that one like weird thing that kind of grounds you, like Ewoks or Jar Jar. But her comedy was like my kind of comedy, which I don't think fits in the Star Wars universe.
Why?
Because it's a very, well, the way she is very blunt. Dry humor. And I feel like that's very specific to Earth, which might seem funny because.
Do you feel the same way about K2SO?
Yes. Okay. But I love K2SO as well. I think they're perfect for it. Like, I think that K2SO is a little more grounded and less silly.
Mm. Okay.
I think that one of the things that I'm not my favorite, I don't think they needed to make it a love thing between her and Lando. But it did bring one of my favorite lines, which
it
was,
works.
It works. I think that It's, I have good feelings associated with her. I think she's very funny. I don't know if the whole equal rights thing, it was, I don't think I needed that, but it served its purpose. And yeah, if you want to hear more, listen to Star Wars Minute. I'll talk about it.
Yes. Interesting. So do you feel like lines like "it works," and do you think any of that was improvised, or like, what's your, because that immediately reminds me of in Book of Boba Fett, the Mandalorian episode, when Amy, what's her name? Sedaris's character.
Yeah.
Is talking about the Jawas. And I can't remember exactly what her lines are, but it's something to the effect of like, it works and stuff like that. Like,
right.
It sounds like she was improvising and they were like, okay, we'll let her. I don't know for a fact that that's what happened, but she,
right.
She has a very improvisation. I mean, she improvises a lot on set. So, but I don't know about this.
I feel like this was written and I feel like the voice acting was done really well. And there is a heightened sensibility in Star Wars. They don't talk low like we do. Like, it's more, it's written. You can tell it's written.
Yeah.
Speech isn't casual.
Mm-hmm.
This is casual speech. And that feels foreign to Star Wars. Just like when Poe goes up to the Star Destroyer and is like, is Hux? Is it just Hux?
Mm-hmm.
Hux, with an H, Hux. I was like, what is this casual, weird way of talking? AKA our way of speaking. It doesn't sit right in my ears, I guess, character choice wise, because they're not from Earth.
Mm.
And in the other movies, they all speak with distinction and they don't use like extra words to say things or have pauses.
So do you feel like it works better that it's coming from a droid with like such with such a pristine accent? Yeah.
Yeah. It's if a person was like that, like Amy Sedaris, granted, that's different. Because that's Mandalorian,
mm-hmm.
and they can't do anything wrong in my eyes. The movies that have to do with my Star Wars, that's where I start to get picky with things like that. Especially because I have a lot to say about someone else playing Han Solo. So,
not a fan?
We just didn't need it yet.
Right.
We didn't need it. Like, we get Star, we should get them when we need it. It's time. We need this. We did not need Solo. Rogue One. Great. Pause.
So you're not on Make Solo 2 Happen train.
Maybe in like 20 years. I don't feel enough for the characters from this to see more.
I don't think I do either. I think I would, though, if I mean, I talked a little bit about this on Star Wars Minute, probably, but I think I would maybe have liked to see Han younger than this.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Like a very different
little kid.
Yeah, because Han young adult and Han like middle adult is not that different. I would like to see more like actual origins. Your origins don't start when you're 25. Oh, okay, I understand.
When you get your last name.
Yeah.
You're by yourself? Solo. I remember I was sitting at Alamo Draft House, and I was sitting next to George Hendricks and my husband, and I said, oh my God. You just made that canon? That's in the holocron now. That line that someone probably was like, woke up from a nap, wrote it down on a piece of paper and was like, I'm a genius. People are going to love me for this. Love me, I say.
that line. Yeah.
Another yeah. deep sigh.
It's a deep sigh. It's a deep sigh. But the way that I also rectify that in my head is like, so he's named Solo because he's an officer enlisting in the army alone. How many other young lost souls are there signing up for the army who are alone? So there must be a lot of solos around the galaxy.
Maybe he has a thesaurus and he's like, alone, lonesome.
That's what they said.
By himself.
Well, I like the idea that there's a future Solo That's... can find their, not blood family, but they can find like their crew of other Solos who are in that same situation enlisting in that Imperial army.
They find their friends.
Yeah.
Well, it's like in Game of Thrones when they have the last name Snow.
Oh. But I know.
Well, spoiler, their last name's Snow if they're a bastard in the north.
Is it snowy there?
Yep.
Oh.
On the nose.
Wow. So we're almost at the end of the minutes, and I'll just keep playing them. We don't have any more music here.
It's just us. You don't have to pretend. I'm in the same situation.
You are?
I'm sure you've noticed that Lando has feelings for me, which makes working together difficult because I do not feel the same way about him.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I see that.
Sometimes I think, maybe. But no. We're just not compatible.
How would that work?
It works.
So something I want to call attention to there is that even though there's no music and we're not looking at it, we're just listening. While L3 is delivering her lines, we can hear her mechanical body moving. So it kind of adds, just from what we're hearing, a sense of like her moving. Like, we can't see exactly what she's doing, but like in my head, I can sort of picture her turning around and like bending her arm or like shifting her weight somewhere. So.
That is called the business of a scene where you are finding things to do in the scene to make it real. If you're in a play or something and you're folding clothes while you're saying lines, it's the business of the scene. Or at least that's what my acting teacher called it. but it helps fill out a scene. It makes it feel like something actually is actually happening and real life is happening around it. She's really flying a ship. One part of this scene that I don't like, Emilia Clarke is a great actress. Her character is a great liar. Why does she act so shocked when this scene is happening? Like, really? What? It doesn't make sense to me because she's trained in the art of persuasion and making people feel comfortable to give up secrets. But she hears this news and can't be like, because even I can pretend, I'd be like, oh yeah, really? Mm-hmm. And in my head, I'd be like, what the? But she was so obviously shocked. I don't know, if I was on the receiving end of that, I'd be like, what? If it was something I actually believed, it's a very interesting choice.
I agree with you, and I think I know exactly what you're talking about. And I was wondering if it's maybe because of ADR stuff, and like maybe she didn't know what she was super like really fully reacting to,
right?
Or something, because she's also not saying much. She's just saying like what she. This happens sometimes in Star Wars shows. Okay, it happened in the Book of Boba Fett when in the Luke Skywalker episode when it felt like everyone was kind of acting against like a piece of cardboard.
Gotcha.
Like saying lines, but not having like a real vivid sense of someone else on the other end to bounce off of. So
I take that. I respect it. She filmed on flying dragons all of Game of Thrones. She is good at reacting to things that aren't there. Well. So that's what I think happened in Phantom Menace. Whenever Obi-Wan is looking at Jar Jar, he's like staring up at nothing. And because like you watch people, like their eyes move and you kind of like follow their faces around theirs. And that's like when you're doing puppetry, that's things you have to think about, is like how they're breathing, how they're moving, and what they're, how they would interact with their environment. And I would be bad at that, I imagine. I don't think I'd be good at it. I'm very bad at faking things. But because she spent 8 years of her life with, and I don't think this is Emilia Clark bad acting. I think she was given a note and took it from the director. Because I think that they wanted all of us in the audience to be like, what? Really? You and a droid? And you and a human? My goodness. And like have a real reaction to it. Where in Star Wars, humans could be with droids. We don't know. So it's like, it doesn't make sense to me that she would have a outwardly surprised and kind of judgy view towards it.
I didn't pick up as much on the judginess of it, but it was almost not demeaning, is that's not the right word. It's called when you're like patronizing, a little bit patronizing. Yeah. Where she's like,
I think that's right. I think that's closer. Judgy is like she didn't look judgy in that, but it wasn't less of a positive word.
Like she's like, right. Yeah, I can see that. Like trying to be like you said, like this droid is
a
like
peas.
What the hell? But
yeah,
I'll just play along to be polite. Like I think right. She's being more polite. I think her politeness here and in a few other places where she switches off between, from scene to scene, she switches off between being really earnest like this, being really innocent, and being very complex in saying things, but I don't know, transmitting like a duplicitousness or something. Like I'm thinking about when Han meets her or finds her on Dryden's yacht and they're having their whole conversation. Like I think that's like all a lot more, like I'm getting a lot more from her there. Where she's like, you look good, and you know, that whole conversation.
Right. So do you think she's being more herself in this scene?
Well, I think that she, either her guard is like really has been let down because she's just had this scene with, or this moment with Han, that maybe she's not as, I don't know, I don't want to say conniving, but
faking
maybe she,
it, yeah.
Maybe she's not as like the mastermind here. But I kind of agree that like the sincerity of her surprise feels a little bit surprising for me, knowing who she is. So.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I still like Emilia Clarke. I think she's great.
I think she's great too. I just think some parts are directed weird.
Yes. There are some weird notes in this for sure. Oh, that's the choice, huh? Okay. Well, you're the director.
Well, it couldn't have been very easy to reshoot so much with like different direction, with like a different vibe after already getting right? to your character.
Man, that, I remember reading the articles when this was starting to come out and I was like, oh my God, they're going to ruin it. And then it came out and it wasn't ruined. It's a movie. It's not my favorite by far Star Wars movie, but it's not a bad movie.
Yeah, it's all in one piece.
It could have been fragmented. You're right. It could have just been bits and pieces just put together in any order.
I kind of wonder what it would have been like if it were just like chapter one, chapter two, chapter three, kind of disjointed. I don't know.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be so bad.
That's actually a fun thing to play with.
Yeah.
Book. I like when books do that.
Me too.
Just fast forward a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Have you read Darth Plagueis?
No, I have not.
Hmm. Yeah, that does a lot of right time now, jumps. So, it's satisfying to see characters like then jump forward 20 years and you're like, oh, we get like actually like a big span of their journey. And by they, I mean, you know, Plagueis and Palpatine and stuff. So,
right.
Yeah. So
well, that's an improv when you're doing comedy. You don't want to talk about something that happened. You want to show it. Mm-hmm. So if you're like, well, yesterday when I was at the thing, this giant bear came up. We don't want to hear. We want to see the scene with the bear. So it's like these things are happening. You don't need to talk about like the little stuff. Just jump to the next big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Continue on with the life and the development.
Yeah. Also, a creative writing tip. A storytelling tip.
Yes. You're going to learn a little bit of everything today.
Yep. Do you have anything else to say about the music or sound in these set of minutes?
I don't have time to listen to podcasts ever because I have a short ride to work and I'm at work for my entirety of my life. I'm going to listen to this podcast from start to finish because I'm so excited to hear about more of the music stuff.
Oh my gosh.
I'm so excited. Kind. Yeah, I'm very excited.
That's... I don't even know how to respond because I'm just a little flustered. Okay.
Yeah, you don't need to. But it's like I am not joking when it feels like I was able to watch Star Wars again for the first time because I'm learning something new that I never knew. And I know a lot about Star Wars. I came in first in trivia on Star Wars Day, so I carried my team.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But it's... rare that I'm learning new things about it. So to be able to go back and listen to all of your episodes and hear how to listen to the music better, I will not be able to do it on days that I have to go talk to other human beings. Because I'll probably just talk about that and then start crying.
Then you'll know who your real friends are.
I know, right? No, but they'll cry with me. Like, I just learned this thing. These three beats mean this and the whole movie means something different now.
Oh, music.
Right.
Okay, well, before we get to the Star Wars Music Minute questionnaire, I will do the rundown of the themes and where we are in the soundtrack for those listening. So in this set of minutes, we hear the Han and Kira theme, Secrets theme, the Rebel fanfare, and Young Han Solo, the heroic version. In the soundtrack, we are on Lando's Closet, also known as Lando's Closet 4M28. We're also... in Trust No One, 4M29. And one other thing that Shazam popped up when I did the Shazam test, which I suspected already, but interesting that the algorithm picked it up, is it also pulls up Super Extra Deluxe End Credits Suite as one of the tracks that's playing. And I'll get to this at the end of the season, but the end credits of this film sound just kind of like recycled tracks from previous parts of the film, so this kind of confirmed that suspicion.
That's amazing.
A little bit. So yeah, this part is in the end credits. Not even, we'll get there, we'll get to the end credits when we get to the end credits.
Yeah, spoilers.
Yeah, but are you ready for the Star Wars Music Minute questionnaire?
I can't wait.
All right, so this is the same set of questions that I ask every guest. Question number one is, in exactly three words, what does Star Wars sound like?
Home, excited, adventure.
Ooh. I don't think anyone said home before. Nice.
Yeah.
I like it. Question number two. What is something related to Star Wars music or sound that you're curious about and or want to learn more about?
All of it.
Good answer.
Yeah. All I want to just learn, period, now, because it's... And what's funny is that you let me know the questions ahead of time, which is why I had my three words picked out, even though I was choosing from like 15, because I was like, and I listened to it, like listened to the crawl for the, like, just to like kind of feel. And I was just like giddy and like jumpy. And I'm like, this is exactly what I love. But now I know that I know nothing and I'm excited to know more.
I love that part of the journey when you're like, well, I love knowing nothing, but seeing that, you know,
because seeing that it's there, you're like, exactly. What?
Yeah. And finally, what is a score or soundtrack that you're fond of besides anything Star Wars?
Contact.
Oh.
I love Alan Silvestri. I think he makes such beautiful music.
Contact. I have not listened to that score. I
walked down the aisle to the main theme from Contact for my wedding.
Oh, wow.
It is beautiful.
I'm going to have to give that a listen.
Yeah, it is. And Contact has a, I always used to watch it with my dad, and it starts out with like her and her dad, and her dad doesn't, not really spoiling anything. Her dad dies. And she grows up and she like goes into space, and it's just this growth journey. And the theme is like galactical, but grounded and soft. And it's amazing to walk down the aisle to, is what I realized when I was listening to it. I was like, oh, I can. Amazing. Because our whole ceremony was music themed. So we walked back down to the metal theme from Star Wars.
Nice. Nice.
But I highly, even if it's just the main theme, ooh. It was the first thing I thought of when I saw the question.
Nice. I like it. Well, thank you for coming. Like, we've been trying to do this. Well, I reached out to you like a year ago.
I know. Oh my gosh.
I've wanted to have you on the show for a long time.
I know.
And finally, we did it. So
we did it. Yes.
Yes.
The best day ever. I'm so excited that it actually got to happen. Yay.
Where can people find you and your work online, if at all?
Sure. I mean,
you have a lot.
So I have a website, The Crystal Beth. It's outdated. There's lots of old stuff on it because I haven't had time to do anything fun or new in my life. So you can go there. I have some sketches there. The Crystal Beth on all social media, as we just mentioned. Maybe don't message me on Twitter because I won't get it. I don't go on that often. So, yeah. Instagram. Website, emails, thecrystalbeth, thecrystal.beth@gmail.com. And I have a podcast coming out in July that I'm a part of. It is a role play Dungeons and Dragons-esque podcast called Sequest. And I'll be doing that with Asterios Kokonos, who's also from Star Wars Minute.
And a fellow Greek.
And a fellow Greek.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
I just found out I'm Greek. Very exciting.
You are Greek?
Yeah.
Oh, well, welcome to the family.
I'm here now.
Yeah.
I was wondering why I looked like this when I thought I was Irish. Makes more sense. But yeah, that'd be it.
Didn't you do the crystal? No. The Fifth Element podcast too?
Oh, yes. I did the Fifth Element.
Is that still up for people to listen to?
We're trying to figure out where it went.
Oh.
The website has like Turkish soccer on it now.
Oh.
So I think we lost the rights to it, but we're still trying to locate our episodes. And we'll be real bummed if they're gone because that was a significant chunk of my life. But if you happen to see the Fifth Element anywhere, my husband and I did that one.
Going through the Fifth Element.
StarWarsMinute.com. Yeah.
One minute at a time.
1 minute at a time.
Yeah. Well, thank you again, and listeners will be back next week to talk about minutes 71 through 75 of Solo, a Star Wars Story. May the Force be with you, and thanks for listening to Star Wars Music Minute.